Welcome to We Are IR, a new podcast about international relations, geopolitics and societies around the globe. With me, Robert Ballante. On the show, I talk to young and not so young professionals from world-class universities. We discuss their areas of expertise in order to bring fresh perspectives on the most topical issues of the world. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Maurice Gayan, who graduated from Leiden University and afterwards worked for the UN in Sudan. Maurice has been focusing on a crucial matter for the African continent, the dispute between Egypt, Ethiopia and Sudan over the waters of the world's longest river, something that came to be known as the Nile Crisis. But before we start digging into this underexplored matter, can you please tell us a little bit more about your background and how did you become interested in this issue?
Well, I used to study international relations with a focus on the Middle East, and because of this I was living for some time in Egypt, and I was very interested in Egypt's relations with its neighbors, particularly with Sudan, as they shared the Nile. And after my undergrad, I spent some time in Sudan as well, and in the end I focused some research on the issue of how this Nile crisis impacted in the light of Chinese investment in the dam construction of this region. And now at Beijing University, I'm also researching this issue of Chinese impact in the Nile Basin region, and also in the wider Middle East.
Fantastic. So let's get into it. Nile's basin covers 11 countries, from Tanzania all the way to Egypt. Historically, however, because of its economic and military predominance, Egypt has exercised a de facto hegemonic role over the river's legal regime. Practically, from a legal standpoint, how did this come to be?
Well, we have to see that there have been some Nile water agreements drafted precisely in 1929 and in 1959, but both of them have to be regarded as being not fully inclusive of all the countries in the Nile River Basin. So in 1929, when Egypt was still under British colonial rule, there was an agreement between Egypt and Great Britain over the use of the Nile water, and they granted, based on historic rights, they granted Egypt 90% of the water, whereas the other countries were either under British rule or being elected as independent Ethiopia was at this time. And then in the 1950s, there was a renegotiation under Nasser, in the light of building the Aswan Dam in Egypt. And this agreement was between Egypt and Sudan, which just was independent for a couple of years. And in this agreement, 75% of the Nile water was awarded to Egypt and 25% to Sudan. Yet other countries, for example, especially Ethiopia, or also the other countries in the Upper Nile region, like Uganda and Rwanda, Burundi, they were completely left out of this agreement. And since this time, there's always been this contentious issue over who can legally have access to the waters. Whereas Egypt says that we need it most because we are in the desert and the Nile is our only source of water. Other countries, like especially Ethiopia, is the biggest of the upstream countries, really want to make use of the water, and in terms of irrigation potential, in terms of hydropower.
In recent years, Egypt's hegemonic role began to be challenged. For example, Ethiopia, the country where 85% of the water that runs through the Egyptian section of the Nile originates, launched the construction of Africa's largest hydro dam, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. The dam is projected to generate 6,000 megawatts of power, to primarily satisfy the electricity needs of Ethiopia and secondarily exports the surplus to neighboring countries, both to increase the foreign currency reserves and build a stable relation with neighbors. This being said, what do you think could be the impact of this dam on the downstream countries of Sudan and Egypt?
Well, both countries very much depend on the waters of the Nile, as they're both in a lie in a desert climate and have almost no other source of water. Especially this is the case for Egypt, where 90% of the water supply comes exclusively from the Nile, and also 95% of the population live on the banks of the Nile. So it's really the only source of irrigation. And as the Egyptian population is set to grow exponentially in the coming years, it will be, even without the issues in Ethiopia, there will be water scarcity in Egypt. So especially Cairo is very afraid that these dam constructions on the Upper Nile in Ethiopia will manipulate the water flow, will draw water away from their source, will reduce also the filling of the Aswan dam, so that less energy can be generated through their own dam. So the impact, especially for Egypt, is very much at stake. It has been framed as a national security issue. There have been, especially in recent years, during the revolution, several threats by Egyptian politicians to intervene militarily. I think in 2012 it was the then President Morsi who threatened to bomb the dam if it were built.
In November 2017, the latest round of negotiation between Egypt, Sudan and Ethiopia fell apart. Given the regional geography, and as you said, being Egypt a downstream state, it has little leverage over Ethiopia, and it's likely to have to come back to the negotiating table when Addis Ababa completes the construction of the dam, likely in 2018. For example, there is going to be the need to coordinate the filling of this Renaissance dam with the waters held in the Aswan Dam in Egypt, as you earlier said. So in your view, what are the prospects of future constructive multilateral cooperation?
Well, honestly speaking, I think Egypt has not much of a choice in this issue other than cooperate with Ethiopia. Because as the Egyptians had to very painfully realize, water flows down. And for a long time, the Egyptians thought that just because they are the civilization of the Nile, that the Nile belongs to them, and they can use it forever for whatever they want. But in recent years, there's been a shift in geopolitical realities, and so Egypt will have to adapt to this and will probably come back to the negotiation table. We saw that in 2015, Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia launched this Declaration of Principles talks for the first time. To have some common space to discuss the issue of the Nile, which was also unprecedented. Many people wouldn't have thought that this would have actually come to terms, especially after the very threatening rhetoric in the, around 2012-2013. But I would say that Egypt has no other choice than negotiate and achieve to this negotiation more favorable terms in this regard.
All right, so let's switch gears a little bit and focus on something that you have researched also about, and it's the impact of external actors in the region, namely China. What can you tell us about Beijing's involvement in the construction of dams along the Nile, also taking into account Beijing's broader involvement in Africa?
Well, the appearance of Beijing, of China in the region as a financer and contractor of large hydro infrastructure, has very much shaken the whole interregional geopolitical structure. For a long time, it was Egypt that dominated all the whole region because it was just simply the most economic prosperous, the strongest militarily, and also politically the best connected region, best connected country in the region. Yet since the 1990s. We see with the stabilization of the political situation in Ethiopia after the end of the civil war, and with Chinese investment coming in, we see very much this emergence of what so many people call new donors in terms of hydro infrastructure, or new finances, not just Chinese, also many Arab dam constructors, but finances who give a lot of money for these dams. And this has very much shifted it, because now countries on the Upper Nile are equipped with all these with the financial resources and with the technological capabilities to construct the dams, and they now have a leverage. They don't need to appeal to the World Bank, to the IMF for funds, which would not be granted because Egypt could always could always interfere with giving funds to this. Whereas with China, we see this disregard for these established guidelines, so these colonial agreements which were reached, and the sheer financial resources and technological capabilities that are coming in are very much altering this. And so I see that the whole issue of dams in the Nile very much reflects the impact that China has on Africa, or Chinese investment has abroad, just based on its scale.
So do you think, are there any alternatives to hydroelectric energy? Can Ethiopia meet its growing energy needs in any other way?
Well, of course, there are plans to introduce solar, wind energy in the region, and also there's Chinese investment in Ethiopia to some extent into this. But given the fact that the Great Ethiopian Renaissance Dam is almost completed, and that Ethiopia doesn't face many obstacles from Egypt, who is powerless in this regard almost, I don't think this will have a big impact. And dams constitute too much of a national prestigious image. This construction of big dams for a country like Ethiopia is very much a big thing, especially because it acts as a symbol of state power. And with the foreign investment that's coming in, with all this backing, with local elites very much involved in the building of dams, I doubt that that some alternative energy source will emerge, which is maybe less politically sensitive or has less reverberations on the political landscape. Also, Ethiopia has 80 million people roughly, which have no access to electricity. So the efficiency of hydroelectricity is just much bigger than of solar or wind energy.
Maurice, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Rob.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.